Hey, Mark.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, you want to do a podcast?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. Welcome to the Unforget Yourself show, where we use the power of woo and the proof of science to help you identify your blind spots, get over your own bullshit, so that you can do the fucking thing you actually want to do.
Absolutely. I'm Mark.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the founders of Unforget Yourself and the creators of the Unforget Yourself system. Look, being a business owner is tough.
Yeah.
With vulnerability and with humor, mm-hmm. we'll be sharing with you the real stories behind the success of those brave and crazy enough to start their own business. And to show you that you're not alone.
You're not. Well, from the accidental entrepreneur to the laser-focused CEO, we have honest conversations about how they got to where they are today. We talk about the challenges that they faced and what they're currently dealing with in real time on their roller coaster journey. Along the way, we want to show you that it's you. You are the most important asset in your business.
Yeah, you are. So let's cut the bullshit and start the show.
Enjoy. Okay, hello everyone and welcome to the show. Today we have Adrienne Potter joining us. Adrienne is the owner of Inner Balance Hypnotherapy. She's a women's wellness coach and a solution-focused hypnotherapist, working with women between the ages of 40 to 60 to help them reclaim their health and vitality and avoid illness, disease, obesity, and burnout, which is fantastic. Welcome, Adrienne.
Thank you so much, Katie. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to be able to share what I'm doing.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's incredibly important. So I want, for the benefit of everybody, could you please elaborate on your story and what it is that you do exactly?
Yeah, so working, as Katie said, with women between the ages of 40 and 60, my backstory is that I've always been involved with health and well-being, but in 2013 was first diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was a stage 3 breast cancer, which meant that it had actually gone to one of my lymph nodes. So I went through traditional treatment and that was fine. It was done and dusted until 2 years ago when I had a recurrence and discovered that it was in my collarbone and a lymph node. So I went through some traditional treatment, but also started to reevaluate my life, working on mindset, working on diet, etc. A lot of weight that I'd been carrying for a long time that I hadn't been able to shift all of a sudden just dropped away because I was eating the right food for my right body, for my body. And then in April of this year, had a major recurrence, in that it probably would have been easier to list where it's not in comparison to where it is. Fortunately, I'm in a much better place now, and a lot of it, I'd say about 80% of it has regressed. But that backstory is what's led me to do the work that I do, because it made me realize that most of us women get to a certain time in our life and we realize that we have completely lost our identity. So we've gone from being that individual to all of a sudden we're somebody's partner or somebody's wife. We then become a mother. We've got the workplace. We're then also looking after parents that have become elderly. And we're running around after everybody else. And we're at the bottom of the pile. Mm-hmm. And most of us are just these people we just get on and do, because that's the way that we're pre-programmed. So what I do now is work with women to help them to live life well and to reclaim themselves and gain a greater understanding as to why they behave the way that they do.
Yeah.
And start to create those changes.
That's beautiful. So do you feel like that like lays out exactly what led to your diagnosis, the sort of losing yourself?
Mine is stress. And I knew from my first diagnosis that it was stress related. In the previous few years, I'd lost my father to cancer. I'd lost 3 friends to breast cancer. I'd gone through divorce. I'd gone through miscarriages. So when I separated from my partner, it was only within like 8 months of that separation that I got diagnosed. And I think the way I look at it is, if you're somebody who's a complete and utter workaholic and you work and work and work and work, and mm-hmm. then you stop, and all of a sudden when you stop, you get hit with the most horrendous stinking cold or flu or cough or a migraine, because the body's just relaxed. And I think that's what happened to me. The stress just took over. The last couple of years, with the whole COVID situation with business, my business has literally been like that. So there's right. been that situation. Husband's been made redundant twice. So I know that a lot of it is stress that's built up in recent times, but I'm also fully aware that a level of it stems from my childhood. I had an amazing childhood. I was very loved. I got a great relationship with my family. But I felt myself being compared to my older brother all the time and just felt that I wasn't good enough. And I was that child that never got angry. I'd get frustrated. I cried. I wanted to be liked by everybody. Mm-hmm. And because that emotion wasn't released from my body, it had got to go somewhere. You know, I talk about a certain type of bucket that you chuck it in. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much room in that bucket. And at some point it's going to overflow. So it's going to overflow in some form or another. And that for me is, that's my trigger. It's stress. And not releasing the emotion.
So what did that feel like for you, holding on to the stress versus when you got to a point where you're able to release the emotion?
Do you know, in all reality, it's only been in the last few months over this 9-year period. It's only been in the last few months that I've realized, really deep down realized, that that's the issue. And I'm still learning about releasing that stress and still learning not to be hard on myself, because I am somebody who I just get on and do it. So it's that stop, take a breath. I need to do this, this, and this. And you can literally feel the stress draining away out of the body. The tension goes out the drawer, out of the jaw. And I just feel this element of calm just washing over me, but it's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Well, what do you think led you to a place where you finally were able to go, it's the stress?
There was certain events that had gone on over the previous 18 months that were very toxic events and people that needed removing from life. And when those events were all cleared up and dealt with, that's when I started to feel myself coming back down again and allowing myself to let go of the emotions, because I wasn't running around in circles chasing my tail at that point.
Right.
And it was a massive, massive release. It just, I could breathe.
What a fantastic feeling. But it's so interesting, because I don't think the vast majority of people recognize their own behavior in that. It's just, they're so used to the type of, you know, familial dynamics or relationship dynamics. And they don't even recognize the toll it's taking on themselves.
No, they don't, because we are, society's changed very much over recent decades. We don't have time for ourselves any longer. I was talking to somebody recently that when I started work at the age of 16, I arrived at work at 8:45 and work started at 9. I had an hour for lunch and then I had a 15-minute break, and then work was done by 5:00. There was no emails, there was no mobile phones, there was no social media. So you finished work and you went home and you switched off.
Yeah.
And now most people I speak to, they get half an hour for lunch. They don't get a break in the middle of the day. And if they do have that half an hour lunch, they're scrolling through social media or picking up their own emails. And so nobody's switching off.
Yeah.
So because everyone's in this hyper vigilant state all the time, they're not aware of actually, like you say, their behavior and what's going on in life.
Yeah. Or even how they probably feel in their bodies. Like they're missing the cues that come up that, you know, start as whispers and then
turn into screams.
Yes, exactly.
But I think the problem is that these things sneak up on us, and it might be that your back's aching or your shoulder's aching. And it's like, well, it's age. It's an age thing. It's not. It really isn't.
No. So I would say this is more of a conversation of a case for paying attention beforehand so that you don't end up in that place. Because then what happens? What do you think most people do when they are in that space where they maybe they have got that diagnosis? What is that sort of go-to mindset then after that?
Fear. And rightly so, because, you know, cancer has been massively associated with death for years, and it's, oh my God, someone's got cancer. And, but actually, it doesn't have to be a death sentence. But the problem is that the clinicians, and I'm not saying every clinician, but the majority of clinicians put you in that state of fear. And you've got this long list of tick boxes, or you must have surgery, you must have chemotherapy, you must do this. And if you're having chemotherapy, you can't do this, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of what they're saying is completely wrong. Take a step back and make some informed decisions. Do some research. You know, you should be on an alkaline diet. You should be doing mindset work. You should be allowing the body to rest and recover. But unfortunately, the information that we're fed, it puts everybody into that state of panic and fear. And rather than saying, I'm not going to make a decision straight away, they leap into making those decisions. And it's just then becomes a downward spiral.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the quickest, easiest decision, or it feels like it, is letting somebody else make the decisions or tell you what to do.
Yeah. And it's your body at the end of the day. So you should be making that choice, not somebody else.
Right. Which is scary when you're told, hey, you have 3 to 6 months or 1 to 2 years. And I think it, even in those statements lies the biggest issue, because it's often a falsehood.
Yeah.
The time given is, yeah, it can never really be estimated.
No, it can't. It really can't. It is very much mindset based. I've got this school of thought in that you either go down the route of I don't want to die, or you go down the route of I want to live. Yeah. I don't want to lie. Don't want to die is born from a place of fear. I want to live is born from a place of strength and thriving, because you've got that clear vision of how you want your future to look.
Yes.
I know how I want my future to look. I'm 50 years old. I've got a whole hell of a load of living to do yet. So, you know, the I don't want to die wasn't an option. It's like, hell yeah, I'm living.
Right. So what does that look like for you, that mindset? How have you shaped it? And can you give some examples of maybe your perspective on things?
Yeah, I think researching people that have survived cancer for a long period of time. The first catalyst for me was a lady called Jane Cleland, who is English, and she was first diagnosed with cancer in 1994, I believe. And I can't remember, I think it was cervical cancer. And then again in 1998, she was diagnosed with lung cancer, and she'd had a cough and went to get it checked out, had an x-ray, asked the hospital to do a bilateral x-ray so they could see both angles of the lung. They said, no, nothing there, you're okay, that's fine. And then sometime down the line, she one evening was coughing up excessive amounts of blood. They rushed her into hospital. They did another scan, and she got a tumour the size of a golf ball in her lung. And when they looked at the original x-ray, there was something there that had been completely missed. So she did have traditional treatment, but she also worked with an integrative oncologist. So she used a lot of off-label meds. And off-label meds are meds that are no longer within patent. So they are much, much cheaper to access. But the problem is that a lot of clinicians won't prescribe them because they don't make enough money, unfortunately, which is very cynical, but unfortunately it's true. But she worked with this integrative oncologist, and that she was given 12 weeks to live, and she basically kicked butt. And then in 2004, she got diagnosed with leukemia. Mm-hmm. And again, went down the integrative oncology route. They said that the reason that she got the leukemia was because the treatments that she'd had first time around were so aggressive. So again, kicked butt with the leukemia, wrote a book, and now here in 2022, she is very much alive and kicking and looks absolutely amazing. So she was a massive learning curve for me. And I thought, well, if she can do it, there must be other people out there. So then you come across other people. There's a guy called Chris Walk, Chris beat cancer. Mm-hmm. And so many other people out there that have gone down that more natural and alternative route that are absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You know, they've turned their back on the chemical side of things. So that gave me very much a positive twist on things, because I thought, well, if other people are doing it, I can do it. So I started doing some journaling, which did help. I did some self-hypnosis. Dare I say it, in recent times, I've done a magic mushroom, mm-hmm. which is the psilocybin.
There you go.
The psilocybin is out there. Which has actually been used since the 50s to treat PTSD and anxiety and depression. And it's now starting to come back to the forefront. And that was a big turning curve for me. But it's finding the supplements and the alternatives that work for you. And it's reading the books like, Eat Right for Your Blood Type, so that you're getting the right food inside you. There's another book called When the Body Says No, which again is a fascinating book, yeah. But it's all things that you then gives you that opportunity to sit and reflect on your life and your journey and where you've been. And then when you sit and reflect and you sit and write, you start to gain a greater understanding of who you are and why you do the things that you do. From my perspective, I think I've probably become slightly more rebellious in recent times.
Which is quite fun, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So there's this shift that you see, or I should say there's almost a divide between you can go this way or this way, and it's dictated by fear.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we can exactly pinpoint if there's a thing that exists in anybody or if they can generate it to help guide people to make a decision. What have you found working with people?
I think it's like any relationship, any toxic relationship, that you will only stand so much. And then you get to a stage and go, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm out of here. And it's the same with fear. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, some of it is to do with the way that you've been brought up over the years, but you can break that mold.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on how strong your passion for life is. I've got friends that have very sadly passed away from breast cancer that mm-hmm. have got kids. And I've had to step back and rein myself in. I've tried to explain to them, try this approach, try that. And they completely ignored me. And unfortunately, they've passed away and they've left kids behind them. But I'm very much, I've got a 22-year-old that I want to see him get married. I want to hold his kids.
Right.
And that drives me forwards. And I'm not taking that away from my friends who have passed away, because mm-hmm. we've all got our own journey to travel. Mm-hmm. But don't let somebody else's fear dictate your emotions. Just because they live in a place of fear doesn't mean that you've got to live in that place of fear.
Oh, exactly. Fear serves when you are about to be run over by a car, or... And we always make the reference to caveman days with when you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger.
Absolutely.
And while, yes, this is, we're talking life and death in many ways. This is not being chased by a saber-toothed tiger about to be run over, where it has to be an in the moment. I think you've eloquently put it with repeatedly going back to pausing, slowing down, paying attention. And that has been drummed out of us.
Yeah.
So much so that I think a lot of our decisions are just on autopilot. So we end up all of a sudden looking around going, I'm not quite sure how I got here.
No, and this is it. It's easy to fall into those traps.
Right.
But we do have to pause and reflect. And I think the major thing for me that I learned was writing things down, get it out of my head and put it in black and white. And can I change that? No, I can't. So if I can't change it, why am I holding on to it? Chuck it in the bucket. You know, if I can change it, great. What can I do to change it? How is that going to benefit me? And it is that taking time to assess things and living in the moment and taking back control of our own destiny, rather than handing it over to other people.
But that's terrifying. Then we're responsible for everything around us rather than.
Yeah, but then when things go wrong, you know, you've got nobody else to blame, have you?
Exactly. No.
But I suppose part of the problem is we live in a blame culture, in that people don't like to take responsibility for their own actions, do they? I think one of the huge things for me that I get really frustrated about is when I keep seeing these adverts pop up for diet pills. Take responsibility for your own health. You're putting into your mouth the wrong foods in the wrong way. You are in that state for a reason. Take responsibility and don't expect somebody else to sort your mess out for you.
Well, it's the easy button. And that goes back to even with when, if you're diagnosed, wanting to then have somebody else tell me the easy route, I'll just get a treatment and then it will be done. I'll just take something. I don't have to do something. I can have something done to me, for me, rather than me doing something.
Yeah. Which is what I did first time around, and look where it got me. Well, I'm now on my third round of it.
Well, maybe that's the thing we need to lean into, is this like allowance for that, not feeling guilty about it, not shaming ourselves about it, but embracing it and going, oh, silly me.
Yeah.
I'm doing that again. Yeah. Don't want to do that again.
No. Was it Einstein that said the definition of insanity was doing the same thing and getting the same results?
Yes. And I swear that's how we're all living all the time. We're like, why isn't this different?
Yeah.
If I just try harder or do more of it, won't it work then?
Shout louder.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what does this look like with working with your clients? I know you do hypnotherapy and coaching. So can you explain a bit about what those two things look like working together?
Yeah, I started off very much just in the hypnotherapy side of things, which is great because it allowed us that opportunity to do some timeline work and start going back through people's lives, allowing us to see where those triggers were and release triggers, understand roots. Mm-hmm. But where the coaching came into it was that it was enabling people to actually do that work for themselves. So in both scenarios, I'm literally just a guide. I'm there for you to bounce off, but you're actually doing the work. But having the coaching and the hypnotherapy together, it just makes it all the more powerful, because we can find a trigger. And when we found the trigger, that we learn then how to deal with that trigger.
Yeah.
And then that enables us to move forwards, because we get that greater understanding of who we are and why we do the things that we do.
Yeah. So for you, with the who you are and why you do the things you do, what was the most challenging aspect to get to that for you?
That's a really good question, actually. What was the most challenging aspect? Probably self-belief. I've had a lot of imposter syndrome over the years. I had a very successful sports therapy business before I went through cancer the first time round. And when I shut the doors on it the first time, I was blown away by the messages and the comments that I was getting from clients. Even though I was passing them on to other people, it's like, well, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? We want you. And that was great because I was really confident in what I did. I didn't compare myself to anybody. But then I got involved with network marketing, which broke me at a time when I was already vulnerable. All of a sudden, I found myself comparing myself to other people. You know, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I'm doing this, this, and this, and I haven't got the business that they've got. Why have they got their business and I haven't got that business? Right. And that comparison started to come in. So when I stepped away from that and I went into the hypnotherapy and the coaching side of things, I've got no self-belief. I've forgotten everything that I built in my sports therapy business and carried forward everything from the network marketing business. And it's like, am I doing this right? Am I actually making a difference to people's lives? What if I get it wrong? What if I can't help them? What if they think I'm a fraud? And that's been massive, overcoming that. But as people's testimonials have come in and the feedback has come in, and the response that I get from my social media, I'm starting to realize actually I'm not a fraud. I'm actually quite good at what I do.
Right.
Which is quite boosting when you have that moment of, I can do this. I'm good at what I do.
Proof is in the pudding, that's for sure.
And so,
So what do you envision going forward then with your practice? And what do you see for yourself in like the next 5-10 years?
So I've pulled the business down so that I'm currently working with clients 2 days a week and other bits kind of in the background. But I've had to do that from a health perspective and getting that balance right so that I can continue to practice what I'm preaching. I'm in the process of building a 12-week program that's being launched in the new year, which is aimed at people or women who have lost their identity, are that person that they have put everybody else first. They're not looking after their own health and wellness. So the idea is to build on my 12-week programs so that I can work with people. It's a combination of hypnotherapy and coaching with some self-directed learning as well, with a little bit of one-to-one work. But the idea is, I mean, I'm 50 now. By the age of 60, I'd like to be just tickling along. I've got a range of products that's positive affirmation, so some little books and some flashcards. I'd like to build on that, so that they're just going out the door as well. So they're handy little tools for people. So it's more about creating that residual income in the long term, but it's still helping people with simple things. That it might be a book in the pocket or some cards in the pocket, or it might be that they can just hop online and download one of my audios that means that they can switch off for 10 minutes. At any given time during the day, just to get that peace of mind. But ultimately, it's about leaving that legacy for people so that they can continue to discover themselves, to let go of the fear and to actually step into their own lives and be that unique individual that they really are. So, that's kind of the plan.
It's a beautiful mission. The more people that actually can do that, the more people then that will see, then I can do that. It like catches like wildfire. You can see it amongst friends sometimes, those that will choose it. But the more people that step up and do that. And even the fact that you're saying that you're making the cards and the books, I don't think people can understand how important those little bits are to us.
No.
because it's so often in those moments where we grab a card just to look at real quick that we're hit with.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly what I needed for today.
Yeah. This is it. I mean, my packs of cards, I've got friends that have bought them for their teenage daughters. And it's like, if they're having a bad day, they'll get sent to the room, go and sit in your bed and look on your cards. And that's what they do. And they're a different person when they come downstairs because they've taken that time out from everything else and reminded themselves that they are enough, they are worthy, and that they don't have to compare themselves to those around them.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your wisdom, for sharing your story, and for showing up.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. So if people want to learn more about you and what you do, what you offer, where should they go to?
So my website is adrienpotter.co.uk, and you will find me on Instagram under Adrienne Potter Wellness, and the same on Facebook as well. And LinkedIn, I'm just Adrienne L. Potter.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been lovely.
You too. Thanks, Katie. Take care. Bye.
Hey, Katie.
Yeah, Mark.
Want to do an outro?
I sure do.
Sweet. Hey, thank you so much for listening and making it to the end.
Yay, you.
So what happens next?
We ask them the things that podcasters are supposed to ask at the end of an episode.
Can you please rate, review, download?
Subscribe. Yeah.
But why is it important?
Because that's how our podcast gets noticed.
It's how people find us.
It is. And we want all their earballs.
All the earballs all over the place.
We do.
Nice.
Yeah. So please do all those things. We'll be ever so grateful.
And then more people hear your beautiful voice.
Or yours.
Oh, yeah. See you next time.
Bye.